show we're going to be talking about Star Trek. If you're a fan of Star Trek, then you're going to know a lot about what we're talking about. If not, well, go back to the rock that you crawled out of, and then that's you know where you can go. We're also going to be talking about the difference between Star Trek and Star Wars. I have some finer points about what I think each one falls into the category of. But first, what I wanted to talk about is Star Trek Zoos. Axanar, a fan film that was actually crowdfunded on Kickstarter and raised over $1 million, has had to stop production because now they're being sued by CBS and Paramount. And, well, the full story started where they were sent a cease and desist letter.
A cease and don't start.
Cease
too
and
late.
Be like, don't do that shit. To which Axanar responded, because I suppose there had been such precedence of fan films, that they responded by saying, okay, well, what are you basically claiming we're doing? So the suit that came forward is actually the details of what CBS and Paramount are now claiming in order to be able to stop the production of Axanar. So there's a couple of things that you need to understand about this suit before you go forward. One, the suit itself is mainly about the use of copyright materials within the trailer and what's proposed into the future. And they included something like 45 individual items that they want $150,000 for each. Mr. B, I'm very bad at math. Could you tell me what the total of that is, please?
It's a lot of money.
Oh, yeah, thanks. You're really good at math, too. Thanks for that number, fact check your boy.
You're welcome.
But anyways, that's kind of the maximum of what they're asking for. But some of those things include things like pointed ears, phasers, the term Vulcan, the use of costumes that are that resemble the very first ones used in the original series, because Axanar is about a battle that took place something like 50 or 60 years before the events or the supposed events of the original series. So it really incorporates some characters that are mentioned, which is why in the suit there's something called vicarious copyright infringement. And what that is specifically is that any mention or side mention, like for instance, a child, a made-up bleak child or grandfather of a character, could be viewed as vicarious copyright infringement because you're still mentioning some bit of the character. Now, the things got interesting recently because there's a language society that got involved in this because the part of the claim. The lawsuit also claims the Klingon language as a copywritten thing. And that's a big problem for a lot of linguists who actually use the Klingon language in kind of social experiments or in just understanding language.
Academic research.
And academic research and things like that.
Hobbyists
and so,
use it for fun.
Oh, yeah. The people speak it all the time at conventions and things like that. And so what there's a lot of complicated theories that abound about why this happened, because there are many, many fan projects. We're going to talk about some of those briefly in just a little bit, but I want to keep talking about this before we go off on a crazy tangent about all the cool other fan fiction. What distinguishes this one is two things. The first is that it made over $1 million, while the second place made somewhere closer to about $275,000. So almost four times more than what the other one made. So you can see that that's going to obviously raise a few eyebrows. The other difference, too, being that there are a show is going to be coming soon and a new movie. And that's got kind of like the radars of people going. There's some people say there's a third reason, but I don't want to confirm this because there's no way to. It's all rumors. But there's some people that claim that it's because the executives of Axanar were trying to use the funds that were being raised to not only make a fan movie, but to also make a production studio that could make other works. Therefore, kind of making it that whole, hey, they're profiting from the Star Trek angle seem legitimate. But once you look at the actual lawsuit, there is no mention of that specifically as the catalyst. But what really is happening is by creating this lawsuit, they're effectively declaring war on a lot of fan, like just fans in general, and people are kind of wondering, why is this happening? Why would CBS and Paramount jump the gun on this? Why would they be so sue happy? And obviously everybody's got their own little damn theory. I even have my theory. I don't know if anybody wants to hear it. Too bad, it's my show.
Nope.
You have to. You have to. I'll tell you.
Hold on. Before you get into the theory, is there a history of any other Star Trek fan being sued? Or group of fans?
No. There was the what has happened in the past is CBS has tried to put out some cease and desist on some of the projects, but fan reaction at the time was so powerful. And you have to remember that even if you watch a documentary on Star Trek, the one thing that they always talk about is like, Star Trek has the most loyal fans in the world. And I think that an argument could be put forward for that, that perhaps they do. I mean, like, they've been supporting the franchise for how many years now? Like,
oh, decades.
Decades.
People have grown up on Star Trek, yeah. And now their kids are growing up on Star yeah. Trek.
They never knew a world without it.
We're almost to generation number three. Maybe we are in generation number three.
Yeah, probably.
But here's maybe a salient question. Why hasn't anyone else been sued? What has changed?
There's a couple of things.
What
that
were the benefits of encouraging this kind of fan obsession, Trekkie culture, and all the things that come with it, fan movies and conventions and costumes? What was to gain, and why doesn't the new guard? I guess it's CBS Paramount. Why don't they see the same benefit?
Well, there's a couple of reasons why. The first, and I think the most important reason, is that in today's extremely saturated entertainment market, companies are being very, very protective of their brands. So we mentioned the fact that we might talk about Star Wars. So let me bring this up just momentarily to talk about what they did recently when they did their reboot. When they were bought over by Disney, one of the things that they did was they destroyed effectively any other canon that had been written with novelizations and stories, anything about the future of Star Wars, because they wanted to avoid anyone else having any kind of control. So rather than do what Star Trek is doing, which is to say, we are claiming all of the lore, Star Wars took the approach of saying, we're getting rid of most of this lore, and we're mainly focusing on our movie franchises and that kind of stuff. Because for the most part, they're not really a universe, Star Wars. You might think they are because they have all the makings of it, but they don't really function according to any real government that makes any damn sense or whatever. So they're not into lore making, they're more into myth making.
But does that make it true? Like, let's say company ABC buys the franchise in a few years and they said, everything that happened before is bullshit, it's not part of the official canon. Does it make it less true?
It really depends on actually the fans themselves, because,
well, yeah,
and this exactly. goes back to why has this changed? And the reality is, when you look at all of the Star Trek movies, excuse me, most of the Star Trek movies that were made were supported and watched by Star Trek fans. When J.J. Abrams took control of the series, I think it's 2009, what happened there is that for the first time, this was a Star Trek movie that other people who were not fans of Star Trek went to see. And it did kind of bring a new fan base, if you will, or people that are at least interested in going to see a two-hour movie. And I think it made like something like $1 billion, which is almost eight times more than the second highest grossing Star Trek film, I think. They just don't even compare. I mean, I know they're different sized markets and all this other kind of stuff, but generally speaking, they were and even the way that the movies were written, they were designed for a broader audience, and that's why a lot of the people who were big Star Trek fans pretty much rejected not only the first movie, but particularly the second movie, and probably even the third, which is directed by the guy who made Fast and the Fucking Furious. Like, here's a guy who has a powerful understanding of Star Trek. But regardless of that, because now these movies are able to make money outside of the fans. Like, you don't actually need the fans now. The brand is so strong, as recognized globally, that in a sense, your own fans are the problem. You might be like, well, fuck these people. We're going to find new fans and appeal to larger and broader markets.
So there's this hardcore group of fans that have always historically represented the entire market, pretty much, or the dominant market you're trying to please. But the new strategy is to appeal to this global market or something, a whole bunch yeah. of new people who aren't super fans.
They just heard of Star Trek. And so you use the imagery of Star Trek and then just masquerade what is otherwise just a pure action movie.
Pure action movie.
with characters that they heard about because it had a strong cultural impact. It's basically cultural appropriation is what it is.
Yeah, that hurts.
It hurts.
Ouch.
Ouch. And so this is why they can sue now, because it, in a sense, the fans don't matter as much. So, I mean, again, we're going to probably know more about this in May 2017. I believe this is when they're actually going to go to court. There was a motion to dismiss, but that was rejected. So it looks like it's going to go forward. What will be interesting, and this is our next segment, will be all of the precedents that's been set by these other fan movies, which is basically what Axanar is going to utilize as an example of saying, hey, what's the deal? Why us? What's going on?
Yeah, what's fair use in this world? And if you know the whole thing, if you don't defend your copyright, yeah, then you sort of lose the ability to defend it,
which
when
is
you want
why
to.
Star Trek has to suddenly, you know, kind of take its arms up and be like, to war, and I'm like, I don't think you're ready for this war.
Yeah, maybe the legal case will show that it's too little too late, that
it may
you have this culture of fans, and sorry, it has momentum that's longer than you've ever owned the franchise.
I would say that based on the way that court systems function, that there's a very strong likelihood that Axanar will probably lose.
Yeah.
But it's kind of like this goes back to the Scopes Monkey trial, the whole Darwin trials, remember, in America?
Yeah.
When that guy lost. Most people forget that, but it's just because you lose the battle doesn't mean you lost the war.
Right.
So I think that what CBS and Paramount are not ready for is the kind of war that may occur. So let me give you a scenario in which the next Star Trek movie in the most likely world will be a fucking giant bomb that will further distress and separate the Star Trek community from basically the CBS and Paramount. Now, CBS is trying to release the Star Trek TV show, and it wants to offer this through its streaming service only. Right, so it's not offering it through a TV or anything else like that. So this is it's trying to appeal to the internet and say, "Hey guys, believe in this." Now this is Star Trek, so this is a powerful incentive. But there's a lot that they can fuck up, and there's a lot of fans that could basically try to turn their backs on it because
Absolutely.
Of what they're doing. So, you know, when the word on the street, when I read the comments of that, they are all obviously divided among a lot of people. But the vast majority of folks are going to pick the sides of the fans because the franchise has not been kept holy. Like people have basically pissed all over the characters, not understood it, and abused it to shit, and have basically made the least Star Trek thing possible to people. And that's why they're angry. They're like, what happened to Star Trek? It used to be about characters.
Yeah, they're in the uncomfortable position of having millions of critics eyeballing their every move that they make with the characters, but also the sort of unfortunate position of having to make money and bring back a certain amount of cash back to the parent company off of Star Trek.
Yeah.
And that's a tricky thing, because the business strategy might say, fuck your original fans, go for the fucking massive hordes of moviegoers that you could get, that you could attract into the theater, and make even more money. So it's that art versus the business of art question that always comes up. And I think they're choosing a strategy that might end up alienating a lot of their hardcore fans.
Well, what would happen is that this was not a business, but instead of this was just a belief system or a mythology or even a religion, what would happen precisely at this moment is that there would be a religious split.
Yeah.
There would be the purists.
Right, the purists are the original fans.
I would argue. I would actually argue that perhaps Axanar could make the argument that perhaps Star Trek is closer to mythology now, and that the culture owns it. I mean, one, the big problem with copyright is the person who invented the idea is now dead. So it, because of the way the copyright functions, you might think that it's designed to, oh, copyright's meant to protect people who make art. Bullshit. If it was meant to do that,
that's what it masquerades as doing.
If it was meant to do that, then there would be some clause in it that would say that any person who creates art, regardless of what happens, will always at least get some piece of it while they're alive. But there's nothing in fucking copyright law that says that. No. Instead, it becomes a commodity that can be traded and effectively sold off to an entity that's not alive, that will never fucking die, so they can try to fight for the intellectual property that they've purchased in for forever. And that's basically what you've witnessed now. You've witnessed companies that say, no, I'll own this until the day that humanity perishes. great. Well, how does culture advance? How does it move forward now when we're basically strangleholding it with six companies that own every fucking piece of entertainment that's ever been invented? Good job, everybody. Good job.
Well, so my take on it is they're under new ownership, I guess you could say. Under new management.
Well, no, they split up. Because what had happened is effectively the entertainment industry has become just only a few companies. And this is a big problem for Wall Street, who says, we need a little bit more diversity in out here because, well, we need to hide the fact that there's only a few companies. So why don't we actually just, split up again? So they split up, causing all kinds of weird friction. Like CBS does not get along with Paramount, but they own the same copyright. One owns the copyright for the movies, the other for the TV shows. There could be a lot of disparity here, a lot of fucking friction.
Yeah. No, I think they're under new management, and they had a legal review of the lore that's out there. And they probably are aware that if they poke the bee's nest too hard, the hardcore fan community, it'll backfire. But they have to, you know, when you get a company that's pulling in over $1 million, they're building a studio. They have all these things that I feel like the legal force must have pushed hard to say we have to make at least one example and keep the fan fiction sort of confined to the Comic Cons and the Trekkie shows, Trekkie events, and not let them get too big. To the point where they might be considered like a small movie studio.
Well,
the backlash might be even disproportionate to what they're trying to do. They're trying to take a measured response. This isn't just my opinion.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think that it might backfire in a huge way because the Trekkie community is so united in terms of fending off enemies.
Well, not just that, but also in their belief that Star Trek is a community-owned property. Because the very principle of Star Trek is a utopian one. And so if you actually pop the bubble that this is owned by a corporation that doesn't give a shit about your fucking ideas...
Yeah, it's no longer cool.
And you better call it a Fraser as opposed to a phaser.
Yeah.
Or make some other Vulcan, non-Vulcan reference. The problem here being when you read it, the legal brief, there's no subtlety here. Because really when...
No, they took out the big guns.
They took out the big guns of pointing out every little piece of what they say. Well, we own the copyright to everything. But at the same time, you're just...
And then they list like 400 examples.
They list so many examples. And it's clear that what they're trying to do now is like kind of overload by saying like, just look at this. This is a blatant copying of all of our property. And if it was any other franchise, sure, I'd understand. You'd be like, look... Somebody made a movie and they copied all of our stuff from the movie. That's not what this situation is. It's not like somebody tried to make The Matrix 2, release into theaters, and then basically reused all of the same shit. No, it's nothing like that. These are fan-made movies. They fall into a very specific category, you know, in between what we would almost consider satire or it's where you're honoring something and for the most part, in this whole, the tentative agreement we have with companies in terms of you have intellectual property is to say, once you reach a threshold, well, like, let's say Mattel had to learn this the hard way when they fought to try to have Barbie Girl, the song, taken down because they're like, that's our property. And they're like, I'm sorry, Barbie is a cultural icon. You've said it yourself. As soon as you make that claim of being a cultural and having that status, you lose many of those intellectual property rights because you have to sacrifice them in order to be able to have that level and that status.
I'm not going to say that there's never a place for suing someone over some copyright infringement.
No, I'm
not going to claim that. But just imagine an alternate universe strategy where they would have congratulated them on their really great fan work and maybe even donated some of their actor time to go be part of it. Or, you know, those cut scenes that you see at the end of Hollywood movies, they invited some of those people to come in and reenact a few scenes or something. That would have fucking engaged them so hard.
They could have even said, like, well, maybe what they could have done is a deal of saying, you can show up, but you have to... people have to have signed up already for the Star Trek thing, and that's just value-added content that right. people have even on their stream. I'm like, you have a stream of Star Trek, and you don't want to include fan-made shit? Are you out of your fucking mind?
If you could have, if they had given these basically their super fans the sort of nod. Imagine how cool yeah. it would have made them both.
First of all, people have to understand that it's not just fans. There are many people that work in the project, including the actors, that have been in the episodes and that care about that shit, okay? They are fans. Like, for instance, let's talk now about all the different fan shows. We'll talk first about my favorite one, which is called Star Trek Continues. This was one of the early ones that went and did a Kickstarter. They raised only about $50,000, but holy shit. What did they do with that $50,000? So it's basically just as though they pretend as though the cast has just been changed and it's the same, you know, Captain Kirk and Spock, but now they're cast with different people. I would say that most of them are either grade B actors, a couple C actors, but the main guy who plays Kirk is actually a very, very prominent voice actor whose most famous work would probably be the voice of Edward on Full Metal Alchemist. I've actually watched the show quite a bit, so I'm kind of familiar with his voice. He is almost a dead ringer for young Kirk, swear to God. But the thing that is most impressive about this series is the details of it. First of all, they've recreated the set. None of this blue screen bullshit. They've actually built sets. And I don't know who rebuilt these sets, but the fidelity of it is insane. Like, I'm talking, they rebuilt even the memory cards, which were these little... They look like almost floppy disk, little yellow and red and all the different colors. They remade those. They remade the captain quarters, the sick bay, a couple of corridors, the main bridge, obviously. It is an impressive work, and they've made a few episodes. And the way it's filmed, the music, the cues, what the stories are about, everything is like on the money. It's probably the most impressive fan work. I know that everybody else kept on drool over Axanar, probably because they never watched this fan film. They were uneducated about it because it's only got a view of probably, I think on average, the most viewed one has 350,000 views as of right now.
Wow.
And that's not much considering the talent level. Although now I'm afraid that they're going to get sued to hell because they have way more than 45 different copyright infringements. They infringed the entire thing. Like the characters, the sets, everything about it. The suits. It is so uncannily good that they've won multiple awards, Telly Awards or whatever. Their site is just littered with it, and they deserve every single one of it. Now, that's the top of the list. Now let's go down. Now there's been the second one, which I would say is probably high production value but low quality, is Tim Russ, better known as Tuvok. He's made quite a few projects, one of them called Star Trek Renegade. This was actually his ploy to make a pilot to try to entice CBS to reignite the series. Like, he's been trying to light the fucking fires of Star Trek for quite some time. And he even got Nichelle Nichols, fucking Uhura, and Walter Koenig, who plays Chekhov, in the fucking thing. Like, playing their characters. Is that not copyright infringement? They had the actors replay roles. Are they even allowed to replay those roles? What would CBS do? Are they going to sue fucking
the actor?
Chekhov? Like, hey, Chekhov, you're not allowed to play this in shows and in like fan-made stuff. You're not allowed to do that ever again.
Eat shit.
So he also made another movie, a full-length movie. I'm trying to remember what it was called. Oh, damn it. Crisis? No, that's not it. Nemesis? No, that's another one. I'll remember it later, but in any case, this one was, it's a little bit hackneyed. It had the guy who played Neelix in it as well, and it's kind of like a, you know, Federation goes to war. I don't know why everybody always makes those war ones. There's so many of them that are like that. It's just awful. I totally don't, you know, like you're supposed to be trying to save the integrity of Star Trek, Tim Russ, and all you can do are fucking action schlock. Come on, dude. It's about character. I mean, you're a cool actor, but I don't think you're much of a director or a writer. Sorry, bro.
Sorry, bro.
Big fan, but otherwise.
But once you start suing, where does it stop? Because you've had people like Adam Savage from the Mythbusters to to go on his show and recreate his own custom chair. It was so sweet.
Pretty sweet. Yeah.
Do you want people not to be fans? The logical conclusion of a fan is the ultimate expression of like, hey, let me try, let me get involved, let me build something, let me act.
I think that, you know, there's either three outcomes. One is that maybe they jumped the gun on this, and perhaps it was like one of those, we can't just sit on our hands and allow this to happen, kind of knee-jerk reaction. But I think now it's time for cooler heads to prevail. And perhaps it's, you know, like it is, there is still time for them to go back and make this not go to court and waste everyone's money on this. And instead maybe enter some kind of good faith negotiation. I think that this is still possible. Like, just why don't you have some kind of arbitrage? This is, you're going to war with your very supporters. And that is not a good idea. Because even though you could make in the short term more money from global markets to trying to appeal to people, I think that you forget that any franchise has to think about their longevity. You know, it's about people still caring about it in a few years. You don't kill the golden goose, basically. There's a bunch of stories about it. They try to warn us in fairy tales. Like, pay attention, you idiots. Just don't fucking kill the golden goose.
Well, yeah, can we somehow factor in artistic merit, not just financial loss? I mean, What's the most important thing when it comes to art? Is it the money you make from it, or is it the cultural impact?
Listen,
cultural impact is important.
And I think it's easy because, look, those guys are in America, and where most of the fan movies are produced. But one of the interesting ones that's produced in Scotland has a dead ringer for Captain Picard with a Scottish accent. It's kind of freaky, man.
Weird.
Anyways, everybody speaks with a Scottish accent. They have really cheesy sets, but oh my god, Scotland is like the most fucking interesting place to film a movie. Like, it looks like an alien world. It's pretty actually cool to film shit there. Anyways, that one's in Scotland. There's another one from the Netherlands where everyone's got a weird accent. Like, Captain, there is a weird thing on the scanners. We must raise the shields. I love that they're speaking English. Why aren't they doing it in their own native language? I have no idea. But yeah, they decided that they wanted other people to enjoy it, and I guess they know the most people.
Well, English is the intergalactic language of commerce. You know this.
It is definitely the language of the universe, apparently. The Federation has homogenized the universe. Now, this leads me to our last segment, which we'll close on, which is kind of what I'd like to say is the differences between Star Trek and Star Wars. Because there's always been a lot of animosity between these two things. I'm a fan of both. But I will tell you what the difference is, because I'm sick and tired of people who are fans of Star Wars calling it science fiction. Because honestly, it's not science fiction. Now, I know it's got science elements in it, and that tricks a lot of you that think that just because something's in a spaceship means that it's science-y. But I think what you got to remember is Star Wars is primarily one of those old mythology kind of stories, right? Prince rescues a princess from, you know, a villain, his father. And then they have to destroy a fortress, you know, in space. I mean, these things are basically less about the external world, the logic of the universe, which is, I mean, it's almost non-existent. If you try to think about the logic of the Force, it breaks apart. It sounds stupid. The midichlorian thing, they even dropped that shit. They knew it was garbage. It's magic, okay? Yeah. Something happened, it's fucking magic.
Magic.
Why is the fate of the entire universe determined by one fucking family? Magic. Fucking magic. I mean, the one thing, too, when you explore the differences between Star Trek and Star Wars, for instance, and the difference I feel with science fiction is that science fiction will always have its stories be dictated by the logics of the universe rather than the story dictate the logic of the universe and the other way around. So in Star Trek, for instance, you'll have stories. For instance, one in which Data, the android character, has a pen pal with somebody who's on a planet that's dying. And the Federation has a rule in its logic that says that they cannot interfere with any creatures that have not yet achieved spacefaring capabilities. Which sounds pretty cold. It's like, oh, you're not smart enough to get a fucking spaceship, so if something bad happens, fuck you. But yes, that's their rule, and they try to stick to it, except for Data kind of breaks the rules and tries to rescue her. And basically, Boy Genius, as a side story, who's having his own little issue with his old team of whiz kids, figure out a way to save an entire planet's from blowing up, and then they return the child with her memory wiped and conveniently trying to forget that this very important rule that they had was just broken. But again, this is where the logic of the universe, where you're forcing this kind of morally questionable issue, you know, ideology, and you're using that as a backdrop for your story and trying to put human beings in there to give it context. Something that science fiction is always familiar with. Sometimes they'll use technology to put human things into context, right? This is science fiction. I would say that science fantasy is more interested in talking about familiar mythology and then just basically casting it out in fucking space.
Yeah.
This is why most of the stuff feels a little bit like it's a fantasy. Like, for instance, why would anybody have a laser sword? The least effective thing in a fucking battlefield. Let me assure you. Now, I know most of you think, oh, I can deflect lasers. You know how fast a laser travels, pal? Pretty fucking fast.
Pretty fast.
Pretty fast, and there's a lot of people that can fire at once. The advantage, lasers, okay? But you don't want laser fights because laser fights are cold, calculated thing. You want where characters can engage in passionate one-on-one fights where entire fates of universes can be determined by the slice of a sword, which does not happen. And nope. Think about, too, how in the world of Star Wars, they're not interested in really painting a rich universe where there's different forms of governments and different races. Everything's mostly homogenous. Even though they look different, they have the same government. Mostly the same social structures and shit like that, right? There's no mystery about the universe. There's no place that seems uncharted or species that seems so mysterious and that you would make you question your entire existence. No, the entire place seemed pretty known. Like, oh yeah, the galaxy's all mapped out. We've got like thousands of world, all well organized in government. And sure, occasionally they have some kind of strife where people try to take over and build an empire. Oh my God, it so happens in a homogenous world, right? But at least in Star Trek, what you have is you have different space creatures, even creatures that live in outer space, like giant space whales or things like that. Life forms that fit completely outside of your little, oh, they have politics and offspring and they have economies and laser beams. You know, like, not everything needs to be about that. And that's definitely always been the flashier side of science, like, you know, fiction or fantasy. But it's the hollowest part. It's the parts that are just meant to be the fantastic, almost the outworldly elements. But what's always been important about a story are actually its characters, the people that interact with it. And as much as I like the flashiness of fucking Star Wars, there's nothing in it that's compelling story-wise. I'm sorry. Like, there's nothing. Like, yep. It's kind of dull, story-wise. It's dumb. It's really dumb. Like,
a little bit, yeah. I mean, it's not the same as Star Trek in the slightest.
There's one thing that's been
missing. They're going for missing. A different story.
Yeah, but there's one thing that's always been missing about that, and I think that fantasy will always remain childish in this interpretation, is that fantasy has always viewed good and evil as these really kind of distinguishable things, right? That it's easy to tell the good guys and the bad guys apart. They'll even have, like, distinct colors. And the bad guys seem to know they're the bad guys in a lot of this kind of stuff. Like, even in Star Wars, they're, like, the dark side of the Force. They seem to live in this notion of being like, no, evil is good. This is what you want. But that doesn't make any character interesting. Nobody who's really fundamentally evil thinks they're evil. They don't see it as the dark side. If anything, they probably see everything else as sort of some twisted variation of darkness and that their version is the right version. I mean, it's kind of like Orson Welles said, every man has his reasons. If you can't create a villain that has a believable evil to him, if you will, then yeah. It's not real. It's just some kind of like fairy tale that you tell kids so that they believe that the world is this kind of right versus wrong thing, which does not exist.
Pure evil isn't interesting.
It's not interesting at all.
It's like a developed evil that's like half evil.
An evil with intention that makes sense, or an evil that you can't fight. I mean, part of even our own lives is living in evil.
An oddly familiar evil.
Yeah, I mean, like, look, the price that you pay for milk is kind of determined by a certain amount of waste of it. Like, in order to keep the price stable, we will destroy and dump milk that could have otherwise been used to feed people. We will do that. We are engaged in little evils because if we don't do that, we're convinced that our own economies would fucking collapse. So what do? You do little evils. And so, you know, that for me is more interesting. You make a universe in which the bad guy wears black, like he's immediately obvious, like he has a menacing tone. Oh, I wonder who the bad guy is. Is this the guy who's sort of struggling to breathe, who's walking and everybody's afraid of him and who cowers? I'm like, wow, I guess you really have some complex characters here. But anyways, that wraps up our analysis of the recent Star Trek Star Wars brouhaha, if you will. If you have any comments, please feel free to leave them. We are always interested in knowing what you think and what you'd like to see some of the other shows about. Sketchy is a kind of way that we're reaching out to the broader world and community, but only of people that we care about. You know what I mean? Like, we're not going to beg you to subscribe. If you like our shit, you can do it. We don't care. We're only going to fucking tune in for people who are real fans. So if you're a real fan, make a comment. What do you think about which one's your favorite Star Trek, Star Wars? What do you vote for? Personally, I'm Star Trek. Tommy Boy, what are you?
Oh, definitely Star Trek.
Definitely Star Trek. Yep. Yeah. There you go. That's two.
Two on two.
Two down. So we'll see.
Can you tip the scales? I think not.
I think not. I'm pretty sure, you know what. Do you think we could put a poll on our little site? That
oh, yeah, for sure.
We'll put a little poll up. Vote. And I predict, because it's the internet, that probably Star Wars will win.
Every
some
time.
Some fucking Star Wars fan will just hijack it and be like, oh my God, these Star Trek nerds are winning. They'll fuck us over. That's what
happened. Oh, man. Bot swarm.
Bot swarm. Exactly. All right. Well, with that, my name is Jacob.
I'm Mr. B.
All right. Take it easy, everybody.